Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station here in Kodiak, Alaska, where we have partly cloudy skies, 45 degrees, calm winds out at the airport right now, where they are registering 90% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, with the chance of showers here and there. Southerly winds to 5, becoming completely calm this afternoon. Similar conditions overnight, mostly cloudy skies, low around 43, north winds to 5. But tomorrow, look for some rain, could be heavy at times. The Weather Service is predicting up to 2 inches of rain tomorrow. Also more wind, northeast winds to 25, gusting to 40. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough has chosen a new borough manager. And former State Senate President Ben Stevens has died.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Russia may now be carrying out nighttime drone attacks on Ukraine. Reuters News Service cites a video address by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in which he accuses the Russians of launching a new wave of drone strikes. It's unclear where. This morning, drones were heard buzzing over the capital, Kyiv. The first explosions were heard before 7 a.m. local time. Audio from body cam footage of police officers on a highway firing heavy guns at an approaching explosives-laden drone before scrambling for their vehicles when the drone exploded nearby. At least 4 people in Kyiv were killed. Iran denies it has supplied drones to Russia. The White House says Iran's lying. Calls are mounting for sanctions against Iran as the Islamic Republic faces persistent unrest at home. Protesters began weeks ago after a young woman died in police custody after being arrested for allegedly wearing her hijab improperly. But economic and other grievances with the Iranian government are now also fueling protests. The Biden administration has officially launched studentaid.gov, a site where borrowers can apply for as much as $20,000 in student loan forgiveness.
As millions of people fill out the application, we're going to make sure the system continues to work as smoothly as possible, so that we can deliver student loan relief for millions of Americans as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
Officials say that following a brief beta testing period, no glitches were found in the system. President Biden says more than 8 million people applied for loans over the weekend. The government estimates that more than 40 million Americans will be eligible for the program. A new report from Congress shares a behind-the-scenes look at the early days of the coronavirus pandemic. NPR's Ping Wong reports it shows how the Trump administration at the time interfered with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Dr. Jay Butler, a top CDC official, said he was demoralized and haunted by how the Trump White House stripped down the CDC's COVID guidance. There will be people who will get sick and perhaps die because of what we were forced to do, he told colleagues in 2020. It's one of many details in a new report from the House Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Crisis, which has been looking into the government's response for the past 2 years. The report uses interviews from top CDC officials to document how the Trump administration compromised CDC messaging and undermined the agency. Polls show that public trust in the CDC dropped from 80% to 50% during the pandemic. The CDC tells NPR that it is not commenting on the report. Ping Huang, NPR News.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes up 550 points, or 1.8%, to end the day at 30,185. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly has chosen a new borough manager. Assembly members unanimously voted during a special meeting on Thursday to offer the job to Elke Doom. Doom was one of four finalists the borough interviewed for the position in early September. She's currently the interim manager of Royal Oak Township in Michigan and has municipal experience in Alaska, serving as Valdez's city manager from 2017 to 2019. During her time there, she helped oversee completion of the city's new boat harbor, according to her resume. When reached by phone, borough manager Bill Roberts said Doom had accepted the position, although her contract still needs to be negotiated and approved by the assembly. Kodiak Island Borough Assembly members unanimously voted to fire the previous manager at a special meeting in June. The borough's engineering and facilities manager, Dave Conrad, has been serving as interim manager since then. Ben Stevens, a former state Senate president and son of a longtime Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, died Thursday night at the age of 63. Stevens was hiking the Lost Lake Trail near Seward when he had a medical emergency, according to a statement from the Alaska State Troopers. CPR was administered, and troopers requested a Life Med helicopter to respond. Troopers say life-saving measures were unsuccessful, and Stevens died on the trail. Stevens served as a state senator from his appointment in 2001 until he left office in 2005 during the Vico scandal. According to the Anchorage Daily News, Stevens was one of six state legislators whose offices were raided by the FBI in 2006 for suspicion of having taken bribes from oil field services company Vico. Four of those investigated were eventually convicted, but Stevens was never charged with the crime. Stevens returned to politics in July 2019, working as Governor Mike Dunleavy's chief of staff. In a statement Friday afternoon, Dunleavy said Stevens was a great friend of his who dedicated his life to making Alaska a better place. He said, quote, "Everyone will remember Ben's continued commitment to our great state," close quote. Dunleavy offered his prayers to Stevens' wife Elizabeth and their children. In 2021, Stevens left the Dunleavy administration for a job as Vice President of External Affairs and Transportation at ConocoPhillips. In a short statement on Friday, ConocoPhillips President Eric Isaacson said the entire company was deeply saddened by Stevens' death. Isaacson wrote, quote, "Ben was a valued leader at ConocoPhillips Alaska and leaves a significant legacy in the state of Alaska. Ben will be deeply missed not only by his family and colleagues, but in the broader Alaska community." There's been a development in the investigation of one of the four cases of Alaska Native people who went missing in the Fairbanks area 2 years ago. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Alaska State Troopers reported the break during a Thursday public meeting put on by the Fairbanks Native Association and the Tanana Chiefs Conference.
The gathering at the Chief David Salmon Tribal Hall brought together local Native, city, and law enforcement representatives to update the community on the missing persons cases of Frank Manano, Debbie Nicktoon, and Doran Sanford, who went missing in August 2020, and Willis Durendoff, who disappeared 3 months later in November 2020. Alaska State Trooper Interior Commander Captain Eric Spitzer reported receiving new information about one of the cases October 12th, after talking to a group of seniors about the missing persons cases.
I can't disclose what happened exactly, but I will tell you this. When the meeting left, everybody left after the meeting, someone came up to me, and they provided me a tip.
Captain Spitzer said four troopers are following up on the lead.
I am bubbling over with things that I want to say to you right now, but in the interest of transparency, there's transparency, and then there's preserving the integrity of investigation. I will tell you this. In the near future, there's going to be some legal movement on a case. I can't tell you which case, but I'm telling you that we are working on this. We are going to hold those people responsible who are accountable.
Law enforcement has in the past stated that there appears to be no connection between the four unresolved missing persons cases, so a break in one does not indicate progress toward resolving the others. Spitzer also highlighted policies and tools aimed at improving missing persons case response and investigation, including an anonymous online AK Tips window on the trooper webpage, which allows information to be shared and troopers to ask questions without knowing who they're communicating with.
Some people are suspicious about it. They're like, oh, it's not anonymous. They're going to find out who you are. It's an actual app that's designed. It's encrypted, so we can't swim upstream. We can't go back to find out who it is.
Several others who spoke also asked for the public's help, including Willis Durendoff's aunt, Rosie Simon, who referred to a poster of the four missing people.
People miss these people right here. They have family. They have big families. And there's someone out there everyone knows. They can't just disappear all one time with nothing, nobody knowing nothing.
New efforts to increase cooperation and transparency between the public, local government, law enforcement, the Fairbanks Native Association, and the Tanana Chiefs Conference were stressed by several speakers. The focus includes investigation of existing cases and more proactive action on new ones. TCC Chief and Chair Brian Ridley said the Interior Tribal Service Organization's VPSO program has received special designation from the state.
Where we can initiate searches in the Fairbanks North Star Borough when a tribal member goes missing. This allows for families to begin searching for a missing person immediately and for a missing person's report to be officially filed as soon as the person goes missing.
TCC and FNA are crafting a memorandum of understanding about how they'll work together on the issue. FNA Justice Director Shirley Lee emphasized the importance of cross-community and agency unity.
And I'm so hopeful about the work we're about to do jointly with TCC, improving our working relationship with FPD and the troopers and the new mayor.
Lee said FNA and TCC will continue to hold meetings every 3 months to update the public on missing and murdered Indigenous persons cases. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The vessel that eventually replaces the aging state ferry Tustamina is likely to be a battery-powered diesel-electric hybrid. That's as the Alaska Marine Highway System leverages federal infrastructure funding to green up its fleet. Greg Jennings is a special projects liaison with the State Transportation Department. He told the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board on Friday that the state sees electric propulsion as a big part of the ferry system's future.
There's no way batteries won't be a part of any future marine transportation environment in the state of Alaska, just because that's where the industry and the regulations are going. It's where the funding is going.
The 300-foot ocean-class ferry Tustamina is nearly six decades old. The plan for its replacement now includes a room for housing batteries, with the potential to expand. Jennings says the decision to install batteries on the vessel opens a lot of doors.
The beauty of this battery installation is it gives us the flexibility to do a lot of things we couldn't do before.
The Tustamina's two diesel engines currently use about 150 gallons of fuel per hour at cruising speed. Jennings says adding electric power will allow captains to use just one diesel engine at a time. He says that's expected to cut fuel consumption by 1%.
So if you look year over year over the lifetime use of the vessel, that's a major savings to the state. 1% may not sound like a lot, but in ship design, you go to immense lengths to get 1% savings because it's like every day you operate that vessel, that's 1% you're saving fuel.
State transportation officials estimate adding batteries to the vessel would add millions to the new ferry's estimated $250 million price tag, but Jennings says the state expects to lean on federal money to help pay for it. The federal infrastructure law passed last year includes more than $1 billion in ferry funding.
With the infrastructure funding that's available to the state, much of that is very much centered around efficiency and modern technologies. And it behooves us to try to make use of that. You know, if we cannot, for some reason, funding doesn't come through, it is not a drastic step to remove the battery from the vessel and just say, you know, we don't have funding. We're just not going to do that part of it.
The state is in conversations with the U.S. Coast Guard and the American Bureau of Shipping for what kind of safety measures should be in place for the hybrid ferry. Jennings says that adding battery power to the Tustenamine replacement vessel, known as the TRV, will allow the state to learn about the technology and prepare for other projects in the future.
And we're looking at operating the TRV for the next 50 years, you know, nominally. And if we don't design in some capacity for batteries now, the state's going to have to pay a much bigger cost in the future to try to fit it into a vessel that wasn't designed for it.
He says adding batteries to the design will not affect the timeline. The new vessel is still scheduled to be ready for service in 2027. The ferry service is also seeking $46 million in federal grant money for an all-electric ferry to conduct shorter day routes. 39-year-old Bo Adams of Nome was reported missing last Tuesday morning, but was later seen that day by Alaska State Troopers flying overhead. More than 24 hours afterwards, Adams was located deceased, and his family is questioning why help didn't arrive in time to save him.
He knew he was seen, but 28 and a half hours later, his help didn't come.
That's Brenda Adams, one of Bo's four siblings. She says Bo was traveling home from Koyuk to Nome on his boat last Monday evening. When he did not reach Nome by Tuesday morning, Brenda said she called the Nome Police Department and the Alaska State Troopers before 9 a.m.
I knew that the dispatch person at Nome Police Department, and he had transferred me to the trooper dispatch, which I didn't know there was a difference. But again, I've never worked with the troopers or anything of this sort, SAR.
Brenda's cousin from Koyuk had located Bo's boat and was out looking for him all Monday night into early Tuesday morning, but did not find him. Then Alaska State Troopers sent a state plane from Nome. Later that day, according to a trooper dispatch, Alaska State Troopers saw an individual male walking about 2 miles inland from Bo's boat, somewhere in between Golovin and Nome. Troopers say the man did not appear to be in distress, but the plane could not pick him up because, quote, terrain conditions did not permit landing, close quote. Brenda says that was her brother. He was alive, and he waved at the plane on Tuesday morning.
28 and a half hours later, from when Bo was waving and had hope, 28 and a half hours later, he was finally brought back to Nome.
According to troopers, eventually the U.S. Coast Guard was contacted and responded from Kotzebue, though they did not say when the Coast Guard flew out to the area where Bo Adams was last seen. At 2 p.m. Wednesday, USCG found Adams deceased in the same area where the troopers had seen him less than 30 hours prior. Authorities say he likely succumbed to the elements. The Anchorage Daily News reported that troopers are conducting a review of their search and rescue efforts in this case. Campaign contributions are flooding in for Democrat Mary Peltola to keep her U.S. House seat that she won in a special election this summer. Peltola raised more than $2 million in September, a new campaign finance report shows. That brings her total contributions to nearly $4 million. Her two Republican rivals raised far less. Sarah Palin brought in about $230,000 in September. Nick Begich III took in about $57,000 last month. Like Palin, he has raised about $1.5 million in all, but about half of Begich's total came from a personal loan he made to his campaign. Peltola is also getting a cross-party show of support from the late Congressman Don Young's inner circle, a group of 18, most of them former Young staffers, lobbyists, or both, announced they're holding a fundraiser for Peltola. The fundraiser invitation says they're celebrating her commitment to carrying on Young's legacy.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Read diverse, read indie. On Insight Daily Radio, conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central L.A., by author Clinton Galloway, chronicles the struggles he and his brother faced when trying to bring cable television to South Los Angeles neighborhoods, some of the most poor and disadvantaged neighborhoods in the city. After more than a decade of work, a trip to the U.S. Supreme Court, and several small victories along the way, Clinton and his brother were tragically, ultimately unsuccessful. To make matters worse, in 1993, the U.S. Congress passed a law stating that regardless of the civil rights violations that had occurred during the cable television franchising, there would be no damages allowed against any city in the United States. We spoke with him about this important book.
The book came about as a charge from my brother. My brother was the one who got us involved in cable television in 1979. As he got towards the end of his life, he told me he wanted me to put down in writing what we had been through in 13 years of dealing with the city and with the U.S. Supreme Court victory. You know, you think when you get a U.S. Supreme Court victory, you're over, you're done. It was nothing like that. You find out that governments don't really care what the Supreme Court says, which explains how the city simply takes the rights of people and simply dismisses them by treating them so differently. They segregated the black community and didn't allow them to have access to cable television, which was the beginning of technology in that time. So when you're locked out of technology at the beginning, you're locked out forever.
That's author Clinton Galloway on his book, Anatomy of a Hustle, Cable Comes to South Central L.A., which is available wherever books are sold. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 17th day of October, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 8:49. It will set again at 6:59. That will give us 10 hours and 10 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 58 degrees set in 1982, and a record low was 22 set in 1970. Currently a relatively warm 47 degrees under what they are calling mostly cloudy skies. Just looks partly cloudy up here on Signal Hill. They are calling for a chance of rain for the rest of the day, but partly sunny skies too. Southerly winds to 5 will turn to the northwest tonight. Just a chance of showers tonight too, with mostly cloudy skies and a low of 43. For tomorrow, rain is expected. Rain could be heavy at times. They're calling for between 3/4 to 1 inch now. High of 51 tomorrow with northeast winds to 25, gusting to 40. Mostly sunny skies on Wednesday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up. That will happen at 1:12 this afternoon here on the east side and be 4.7 feet, followed by a high tide at 7:24 this afternoon of 7.1 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:40 this afternoon and be 7.1 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 7:48 p.m. of 10.4 feet.
Are you planning to vote in the November 8th general election? If so, your voting location might have changed since you last voted. That's why it's important to make sure you have a voting plan before Election Day on November 8th. Can't make it? Request a by-mail ballot by October 29th or make a plan to vote early in person. Visit elections.alaska.gov to find your polling place and more. This message paid for by the Alaska State Division of Elections.
Mariners, we do have a storm warning for Tuesday from Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side. Southwest 25 knots today, seas to 9 feet. For tonight, southwest 15, becoming northeast 25 after midnight, seas to 7 feet. And for tomorrow, northeast 40, becoming north 50 in the afternoon, seas 10 feet in the morning, building to 20 feet tomorrow afternoon. And for tomorrow night on our east side, northwest 50, seas to 23 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, they have a gale warning tomorrow. Variable 10 today, seas to 2 feet. will turn to the northeast and come up to 15 knots after midnight tonight, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, on our west side, north 25 in the morning, increasing to 35, seas 5 feet in the morning, building to 11 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. And for Tuesday night, northwest 35, seas to 11 feet in the Shelikof. Things happening at the library include their Bridge Club. They are meeting within the hour. They meet every Monday at 1 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library, and all interested players are welcome. Don't forget the library will be closed tomorrow, October 18th, for Alaska Day. On Wednesday at 3:30 p.m., they offer their ever-popular Lego Club. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. And on Thursday at 10:30 a.m., the library will host their Lap Sit Storytime. It's for babies 0 to 3 and their adults. Join volunteer Abby Hanna to share a story and a song with some quality time to play and socialize. Also on Thursday at 3 p.m. is the library's next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open for all ages. Don't forget the library is open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Coming up tomorrow is the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension program that's focusing on preparing and preserving foods for the holidays. Agent Sarah Lewis and Anchorage Program Manager Gina Dion offer a series of classes, and the one tomorrow is making wild game sausage. Learn to make fresh sausage from wild game meat. They do it every Tuesday from 5:30 to 7 p.m., and videos of the class will be available afterwards. To register, you have to do it before 5 p.m. tomorrow for next class. Do so by emailing Sarah Lewis. That's Sarah with an H dot Lewis with a W at alaska.edu. Or you can call her at 907-523-3280, extension 1. Meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough include Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be meeting tomorrow at the Bayside Fire Hall at 6 p.m. The Planning and Zoning Commission will be having their regular meeting in the Assembly Chambers on Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. and also at 6:30 p.m., but on Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting also in the Assembly Chambers. Friends of Wendy Beck and Harvey Goodell are inviting you to join them to help celebrate their lives. That's happening at the Buskin Beach House this Wednesday, 3 to 7 p.m. Please join them and bring a favorite dish and some stories to share. Again, that's at the Buskin Beach House this Wednesday, 3 to 7 p.m. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting their new volunteer training. Training will be on Thursday from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. for all volunteers, and on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. for direct care volunteers. For more information and to register, visit their website at hpck.org or give them a call at 907-512-0600. You are cordially invited to the 38th Annual Stiles Clark Auction. That's happening October 22nd at 5:30 p.m. at the Afognak Native Corporation building on Near Island. Seats are limited, and you can get your tickets at the Stiles Clark Auction Facebook page. That's S-T-I-L-E-S, Clark Auction. The event is for ages 21 and over. Funds raised go towards Santa to the Villages, local nonprofit organizations such as grants and scholarships. If you want to donate a gift basket, service, monetary contribution, or anything of the like, contact Brittany Chevalier at 325-347-4120, or again, you can find them on Facebook at the Stiles Clark Auction. Try to do that by October 14th. You're invited to join them at the St. James the Fisherman Church on Tuesday, October 25th, a week from Tuesday, for the annual prayer vigil to honor and remember domestic violence victims who have died in the last year and in previous years at the hands of their abusers. Following the vigil will be a dinner and then the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center annual membership meeting. The vigil begins at 5:30 p.m., dinner is at 6:30 p.m., and the annual membership meeting begins at 7 p.m. and should conclude by 8. RSVPs are requested so they can make enough food for the attendees. Contact them at 907-486-6171 or email them at contact@kwrcc.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.